Hi, welcome to another episode of Stuck at Ohm. Today I'm talking to Herman Narula, whom I've never met before, but he's the CEO and co-founder of Improbable, which is like a gaming environment and gaming company based in Cambridge.
London.
London.
And we're sort of a simulation technology for gaming and defense.
Yeah. And I was introduced to him by a common friend, and here we are talking on Zoom about the pandemic and the future. So welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
So how is London right now? I know you're based there and you guys have been in a lockdown for a while. How are things in London?
Such a strange environment now. I mean, it's amazing how quickly normal can shift. And so we're kind of in this odd new normal where, the streets are unrecognizable from how they were before. Most people that I know haven't left the house in, 5, 6, 7 weeks. But as a introvert that enjoys games and working at home, I haven't really noticed much of a difference, if I'm honest. This is sort of all that's happened now is all of the parties I wasn't invited to, they're not happening at all. So, all us introverts are happy. But it's interesting, culturally, I think, Britain and England are like well prepared for this type of hardship. And I think people have really pulled together and there's a lot of positivity. And I hear lots of stories of friends helping each other out, older friends, et cetera, who need support. So I think net, the country is handling it as well as it can.
Yeah. Are you surprised by like how quickly people are trying to get out in the United States without really having to lick the problem?
I think it's a really complex problem. One of the, things our company is doing is actually working with the UK government a bit on trying to support some of the efforts along with other tech companies on thinking about those types of problems with our tech. And it is a really, really hard problem space. I think we'll look back only long after the experiments are done and understand, what is too early, what is too late, who's right, who's not right. It's a complex adaptive system, this whole movement of human beings around a city space and how diseases transmit and where things go. And I think it's really often very non-intuitive in the way it behaves. Like Sweden seems to be, taking a very different approach. And again, I'm a layperson in all of this, so I'm just looking at it from afar.
Yeah. So for a lot of people who don't know your work and your company, can you just give us a quick overview of what you guys do?
Sure. We are essentially a company obsessed with multiplayer games in all of their different forms. And we build games. We build the underlying technology to support new kinds of game experiences. And we also apply that technology to make other kinds of virtual worlds. And our goal is really simple. We want to make it so that people can literally live in a virtual environment that is representative and complex as the real world. And we also want to dramatically reduce the cost and difficulty of building and innovating in multiplayer games. Multiplayer games are in a really interesting inflection point where we think if we can, bring down that cost and accelerate that rate of innovation and provide technology that lets people go beyond the limitations they currently have in scale, some really amazing experiences can be created. So we're working with developers all over the world. We work with NetEase in China, a number of publishers and developers in the West, and we're launching a game called Scavengers into beta later this year.
So, we saw recently there was like a huge Travis Scott concert in Fortnite, and there have been other incidents of like such performances, whether it's in Fortnite and Minecraft and stuff like that. Like, what does it all tell you? Like, where are we all going in your mind when you see bits and pieces of that information? I'm always intrigued on from like, how is this behavior going to change us as people, right? Like, we are being forced to change in this really time, but how will we change as a species going forward?
I think that if you take a historical context, from the moment that we started doing agriculture, we started modifying the environment around us in radical and unnatural ways to serve patterns of living that we felt were optimal for us. Now, a modern city today is in every sense a virtual environment. It is a massive constructed edifice of microclimates and specific experiences and specific, features or bugs, if you might like, that modify human experience. I think the natural next step beyond that is to be able to create completely virtual environments, right? Which we can make of them anything that we want. And the experiences we can have inside them and with each other could be really, really profound. So I'm a believer that a logical, natural thing for us to do is to create virtual environments that can give people experiences they could not have in the real world and connect them in ways that they could not be connected in the real world. I mean, a really important point for me is there's only one place that I know of where rich or poor, regardless of race, gender, background, nationality, country, economic conditions, anything, you know, people are completely equally mixing. And that's in the matchmaking queue of an online game. You know, no matter what your social demographics, at least if you have access, of course, to that, but 2.5 billion people now are gamers and they play in that environment. You know, you're thrown into a melting pot that just doesn't exist anywhere on earth in that same way. I mean, other than maybe like national service in some countries or certain school systems that, you know, that are reasonably well integrated. So I think with virtual worlds, we're moving to this internet of experiences, this new plane in human experience. And I think things like concerts in Fortnite are the stepping stones towards that. You know, they're the little building blocks towards where we're going.
Do you think that becomes the new normal, given that, you know, I mean, if this pandemic, you know, I don't know if people have noticed this and I haven't read much about it, but the speed with which pandemics are coming at us is actually increasing. You know, it's like, oh, they may not be as widespread as this, the present pandemic, but there have been more and more outbreaks more often in more places. So clearly, you know, this is not something which is very likely to be going away anytime soon. You think this modifies our behaviors around, you know, what has been social gathering for, you know, for centuries now, like, you know, whether it was the Roman games or like the baseball or cricket or football, whatever you might, or concert, music concert. So how does, like, in your, like, you think about the world from a gaming perspective and like multiplayer gaming and virtual world perspective, how do you think it's going to become eventually, you know, like, you know, 5 years out, 10 years out, 15 years out?
So one interesting point for me is, you know, you gave examples there of gatherings, games, festivals, etc. I mean, how many human beings have actually ever been in a crowd of, you know, 250,000 people, or, you know, a vast number of people, more than would normally occur other than in the biggest marches or the greatest events? Like, you know, outside of kind of, I guess, ancient conflicts, right? Or like a war zone or like a mass construction project. Most people have never experienced that. So, you know, I don't think virtual worlds are exactly going to necessarily replace social gatherings. I think you raise an interesting point on what it means for, you know, in a new normal in the context of preventing disease spreading, et cetera. But let's assume that we solve those problems eventually. I have a big belief in our innovative ability to handle healthcare problems over the long term. I still think that we're talking about augmenting human experience in a way that actually you can't do very well in the real world. You know, the other factor for me is quality of experience. So let's say that you are old or infirm, or let's say that you are geographically remotely located. You know, the ability to then participate in a mass gathering, a mass event with other humans is something that, you know, a virtual world is essential for accomplishing. So, and also, I think, you know, the other point that I'd make is I think a lot of the thinking on virtual worlds is falling into a trap of trying to replicate the real world rather than trying to improve upon the modes in the real world. Like when we do online shopping right now on Amazon, we don't wander around virtual aisles, plucking virtual objects off of shelves and putting them into a cart, because that would be worse than searching for something, finding it and buying it. In the same way, I don't think virtual worlds will just look like a copy of the real world. I don't think we should try to make that or replicate that. I think we should think about what types of experiences or interaction or communication we can uniquely have in those environments. And that's what I think we'll see in the next 10, 15 years. Like I gave a TED talk last year on this topic. And one of the things I opened it with is this idea that the biggest changes are always the things we are not expecting. You know, if I think about social media, I don't think anyone necessarily saw that from the earliest days becoming as weirdly fundamental to the way that we operate as it is now. Like you could probably have predicted, you know, the kinds of keeping in touch with friends, but predicting something like Tinder would be much harder, right? It's like a, it's like a new modality of interaction that is distinctly different from its real world counterpart. It's different in every sense. It's not, Tinder is not simply a replication of dating in the real world. It's a different take on it. And I think that's what virtual worlds will offer us, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I've been thinking about is from that perspective is like, obviously, you know, it's not going to be the same. I don't think we're going to have the same concert experience in the future, like the way we've had it for the longest time. So, I mean, if people are experiencing these things in like different mediums, whether it's Fortnite or like on their Zoom screens or whatever. And so I'm looking at that and I'm just saying, things might be different. It may not be the same. Like, you know, so what does the hybrid look like? Could we start to think about, you know, concerts in a way that they are held, you know, in a manner which is like, you know, we haven't developed the platforms. Like, you know, for your platform, should perhaps be thinking about how do you become the engine to do
hybrid? Absolutely. Right? No, absolutely. I think there's really interesting opportunities there. And I'd say on the concert side, you know, in Fortnite and in other experiences where people have tried to do live events, there's huge limitations in the number of people you can have in any gathering or spot. I mean, you know, you can have a maximum of 100 players in a Fortnite session. And so it can't exactly replicate the experience you have in the real world. And I think what we're trying to do with technology like ours, and I think other people are as well, is beat that, you know, get to the point where you can actually have thousands of people in a common space. And then why stop there? Why not have more people than you could have in the real world? Yeah. Why not allow those people to interact with the real audience that's there as well, right? In a hybrid way, as you described. So I think that's what we're missing. And to be totally honest, if we look at even the investment in innovation, new game content, and new opportunities and new things, you know, we're in an industry where innovation seems to come from the outside quite a lot in gaming. You know, the big franchises tend to incrementally improve on what they have year after year. The most interesting thing for me is that the most notable companies probably aren't necessarily taking this kind of risk today, despite the obvious opportunity that exists for it. And that's interesting. I wonder if we'll see new games companies springing up that specifically target this opportunity, which, you know, would be great for us too, because we provide the tech.
So when you look at the world right now, I think in many ways, you know, we are all experiencing our present reality, whatever it might be, through the screen, right? And through cameras in our laptops and iPads and whatnot. What do you make of that? Like, how do you think, like, there seems to be like, we're living in a kind of a virtual reality. It's we're living in sort of a game, except we are real people. And I think, you know, I think it's a very profound shift, which is happening to us. We haven't really figured out what it is. I wonder what you think about it.
I think it's the gradual freeing of your identity and your ability to influence the world from your physical body, right? Even having a phone and texting and calling and being able to share and mind meld with someone from a great distance is a step in that direction. You know, I think we are moving there. And I think that, I guess there may be one point of difference I would have with some of the prevailing thinking is there's a strong belief that getting there is about physical immersion, right? So VR or plugging in like the Matrix. I actually think that mental immersion is more important. So being in an environment or engaging in an activity that you actually care about and that immerses you and gives you a sense of meaning in that world. I think we're moving to a place where more and more of the things that we find meaningful are in virtual worlds or are embedded inside world of thought in some form or another. And you might make the argument we've always been there, right? I mean, you know, we've always, as a society, look at sport. Sport is entirely in our minds, right? The emotion, the meaning, the matter of it all is something that we bring to it. You know, like I love soccer, for example, and, you know, I will feel genuinely emotionally hurt if, you know, my team Arsenal lose a game, right? It's a weird thing to feel because it's such an arbitrary and imagined event, right? It's, you know, nothing actually changed about the world, not really. You know, so I agree with you completely. I think we're going to this place where we begin to value the life of the mind more. But the question is, what happens when people start making an income primarily in virtual activities? You know, imagine a situation where someone had a job inside a virtual world. And, you know, we're already there somewhat, but not fully. That, I think, changes society really profoundly. I think where people earn their income and where they focus their energy and their time defines how they live. So I think that's the next big transition.
Can you elaborate on that? Like, you know, what do you see happening? You know, it's like, you know, and, I mean, we are still at the Zoom stage, right? Like Zoom as an interface stage. But like, you know, take me through your thinking. Like, how does your mind tell you the future?
Sure.
Evolves, right? Like even our interfaces, like how do you think our interfaces evolve?
So, I mean, before we get to interfaces, I think just thinking about what we're interfacing into and how that's evolving. You know, right now we have communications tools and we have platforms like we're using right now to talk to one another. And then completely separately, we have games. And those games are sometimes double as social environments, but they're primarily entertainment. They're like, you know, goal-driven game environments in which people come to play a game, spend money, passively consume, sometimes interact, and then leave. I think when those games start becoming worlds where actually I am, you know, I'm doing something entirely different. I'm going to that environment and I am investing in and interacting with a changing environment, which is itself a place where things are happening that matter to me in the real world, and where I might have a job there, or I might contribute to it or own some part of it. And I'm using that as a way of communicating and maintaining relationships that actually exist only in that context. So getting to a place where actually, you know, we are friends only in this game and only in character and only in this context, I think that is a very interesting world. Like the term I like to use for it is the multiversal self. So mm-hmm. The idea that you swap from being one self to many selves that mean different things in different contexts. Like right now in social media, you are yourself, right? You're still you. It's a reflection and a mirror. It's a giant museum of all of the things that have happened in the real world. But as these virtual environments become more and more meaningful, actually your life splits, right? You have different embodied experiences, different sources of value, different things that you're growing at. And for people today who are esports players or streamers or making money inside something like Roblox or Minecraft, this is already kind of true for their lives and for where they are. In terms of interfaces, I think that the real and the virtual will start to blend a lot more. You know, I think as people take more and more of an interest in the virtual world, more and more portals to that world will start to dot up in our society. You know, think of the way that, you know, in as a sort of fun image in central London, right, and in Oxford Circus, you know, you have the big ad boards, right, showing all of those images and sometimes the news and stock ticking. I could see the world being dotted with live information about things happening inside virtual environments and virtual worlds. I could see our news becoming an interface to things happening in virtual worlds, in the same way that we report on sport and engage on what's happening. And then in terms of physical interfaces, like, you know, VR will eventually have its day. That is inevitable. It's just a matter of, you know, enough steps being taken towards that. I don't think that that's essential for the future that we're describing. I think that that could happen just by the worlds themselves becoming richer and more interesting, even on our current interfaces. But when that does occur, when you really can immersively wander around an environment like that, I think a lot of people will prefer it to many things in the real world. And that's an interesting thought.
I think there's a couple of, like, there's a lot of things you said there. I mean, I think about this from a slightly different standpoint. I look at, you know, I look at the computer in front of me and I'm just like, wow, this hasn't really fundamentally changed in forever. I look at the webcam. I'm just like, I see opportunity to, you know, to do something different. I see augmented reality glasses as a way to kind of go immersive into the screen. I see, you know, big giant desktops with a lot of energy being able to do some kind of holographic interfaces into the screen. So I just think that we have this notion of VR with, like, let's put the damn, you know, headset on our face and just interact with VR. And I'm just like thinking, no, we could just, there is going to be, it's much easier to kind of have these interim steps where you can actually have augmented reality glasses where to mimic your office, right? Like, in a sense, in a way, like you talk about, you know, the virtual worlds where you have, you know, different personalities. I mean, I do have different, I have the work home and I have the personal home. Unfortunately, those two homes are blending right now, and I don't like it. Like, because, and I'm sure there's millions of people who don't like it because you want to keep those identities separate. And I think I agree with you that, you know, these kind of virtual worlds give us an opportunity to kind of take, you know, kind of go into this new direction. I am pretty certain that we will have to kind of start thinking about this because, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, when climate change is like, even more pervasive, and you know, it's either too hot or too cold to go out. Like, how do you interact with your work environment? Like, you know, especially if you're in the white collar, you know, workspace, right? So I think this current present becomes pretty much the normal, like, you know, working from home.
I think that the resource and energy efficiency of virtual experiences is a really interesting point that isn't explored enough. I mean, if you take something like fast fashion, let's say, you know, or a need to signal who you are through, you know, through very expensive and costly logistical consumption of really disposable things. We see that in virtual worlds too. We see people, you know, buying items for their avatar or modifying the way that they appear and spending real money doing it. But that has a far lower, you know, environmental footprint than doing so in the real world. So I think if people's lives balanced to mixing some of the real with some of the virtual, some interactions as an interim step, as you say, you know, taking place there, discovering and meeting new people there, and then bringing them into the real world as well, that could ultimately be really good for the world on a lot of different levels. I think it's also good for communities in general. Like, we talk about people wanting to be local. I think the virtual sort of creates a whole new local for people, right? And it allows people to have a neighborhood and to interface in ways that normally they'd be very limited in doing. And I think, you know, one thing that's definitely going to change is air travel, right? And it's very clear already that air travel is going to have a very different future after this pandemic than it did before, at least for a, you know, for an extended period of time. So I could see there being a real need to create more of a sense of presence in the short term to replace a lot of meetings and interactions that are happening. And I kind of agree with you also on our experience being quite limited by what we've had before. So one thing I'm finding is a lot of meetings, interactions that perhaps out of just respect, if nothing else, would have happened in person. This crisis is forcing them all to happen remotely, and people are finding, I mean, we're finding that they're more effective. You know, I've missed international travel that would have otherwise happened, and I can't honestly say that it was worse. I think I managed to accomplish in a few hours what would normally have taken days. So I think when people get used to this, this could very well become the new normal.
I'm excited about that. I've been, you know, work from home guy since 2008. So, yeah. I mean, the only thing I do miss is going out and having coffee with my friends and, you know, having good dinners. But apart from that, like, you know, if I don't have to get on a plane, I'm pretty happy about that. I'm pretty happy about just staying in and just kind of doing my thing, and makes a lot of sense to me.
It makes me worry about the inequality of that, though, a little bit. You know, I'm one thing. One reason I love virtual worlds is that they're equal. They're very equal places in many ways. I think that we're now moving to a world where if you can work from home, then you're going to be very comfortable. But what about the people that can't? You know, and I think I get very concerned that this new direction is going to leave people behind even more than our current society is.
I think if the 20th century was about trying to get more and more people into the middle class, I think 21st century might as well become the rallying cry for 21st century, might as well become take the 30% we have who can work from home to almost 50%. I think that should be a good interim goal for any government, anywhere in the world to try and achieve, because, you know, we cannot have all 100% people working from home. Unfortunately, society has always been divided between haves and have-nots since the very beginning of human, you know, existence. So it's an unfortunate reality. So, you know, we should try and figure out how much of the work, you know, how many more people we can bring into this group of people who can work, you know, remotely or work from home or any of those things. So when you look at the world today, you know, where we are today, and you look at like next 5 to 10 years, what are the behaviors you think we are experiencing right now will stick? Like, I'm asking everyone this question.
No, sure. I mean, I honestly, for me, maybe it's, I'm very close to the problem, but I think stepping back, I honestly think if we're talking about culture, society, and how we see ourselves and how we relate to each other, if you look back 20 years from now, video games are going to be the thing that defines this decade completely and totally, in a way that will seem very surprising to people now. But society has kind of bifurcated between people who grew up with the current incarnation of games and consider them a deeply important part of their life. The average age is like 34 now of people that play in the US, for example, which I think it's a bit older than that. It's changed. And people who've never experienced that and who have kind of no connection to that new reality. Kind of like we saw with the early internet, right? Where there were people who kind of got it and folks who kind of came to it a bit later. I think the young people who are like a generation below me, games are such an important part of their life and how they keep track of their friends, how they define themselves, how they often learn skills and earn income in many cases as well. Like, I think this will truly become the defining thing of this decade. I think much of our culture will be influenced by that. Watching people do football celebrations based on Fortnite dances was extremely eye-opening and very, very strange. To see the virtual bleeding into the real in that way. So to me, that is the most important thing happening. And I think alongside that, as automation becomes more and more prevalent and as traditional sources of meaning and income go away, games and virtual worlds could be the place where we find that meaning and that opportunity for people to do interesting things to come back, where kind of more easily automated jobs, vanish. I think that could be a big panacea for it.
So when I hear you talk, which is what I've been having this side conversation with some friends, I said, well, the legislators in the U.S. didn't do a good job in preventing Facebook from buying WhatsApp and Instagram, which were essentially the next evolution of social networking communication, personal and group communication and visual communication. And I feel right now they should be prevented from buying anything like Roblox or Fortnite, yeah, or any of those companies. Because, I mean, for people who are younger than us, and definitely younger than me and younger than you, I think, the games or the game environment is the interface with which they socialize. And I think that is the key point.
I totally agree with you. And I think one piece of silver lining in that concentration of power argument is I don't know that existing tech incumbents are necessarily as well placed as they seem to fully realize the vision of the world that we're talking about. For the simple reason that I think most of the folks at the leadership level of the biggest tech companies in the world, given age, may not personally play games. I think games are a interesting subculture, and there's a big divide between the games industry and its leadership. And, there's exceptions. Microsoft's an example where, it's kind of embedded at the top of the company, but games are like a weird new thing. And it kind of requires a mindset and a comfort, a familiarity with the medium to take bets and risks on it. And also to be comfortable cannibalizing the attention that existing social products are getting. I do think it's instead of when you think about social media and gaming, it for many people, it can be a better platform to engage with people. So that creates a classic kind of innovator's dilemma situation. I think it'll probably be new businesses that really, win in this space and really define this stuff. But also, if I'm honest, I think that this is going to be such a colossal new space. There's just so much to be done. There's technology, there's content, there's discovery, there's the new work on cloud streaming. I don't know that any incumbent can swallow all of those problems. So I think this is going to be like a whole new industry built on top of what we currently see as gaming.
All right. So you're saying we should be thinking about beyond the games and more like, is games as like almost a interface for all sorts of other applications.
Exactly. And just to give you an example, a data example, games today are worse monetized on average per hour than reading. So that gives you an idea of the kind of money, the kind of consumer spending that is still on the table. No one's really figured out a great, monetization strategy. Things like free-to-play are still relatively new. And if we look at the kind of consumer spending in a country like South Korea and think of that as a mature market and imagine what that looks like when it broadens out to the rest of the world, I mean, this could very well be a $1 trillion industry, just to give you an idea of scale. And that's without really factoring in metaverse and VR and everything else. So to me, I look at this as like that intersection of really important to people and very hard for most incumbents to understand. And so a very interesting area for disruption.
All right. So I know I'm coming up close to my end of my conversation time with you. What are you most excited about right now? Not video games, not improv.
More than all of that, what am I excited about? Do you mean just in terms of technology or just anything?
Anything.
Ooh. I'd say for me personally, I'm really excited about the end of this lockdown, and hopefully it'll follow the pattern of the 1918, 1919 kind of period where we sort of get a roaring 20s, right? We get a kind of amazing revitalization, amazing new music, new art, you know, new culture. So I'm kind of betting on a like a Cambrian explosion of new ideas. So I'm excited about that. But maybe I'm being overly hopeful. I don't know.
You're an entrepreneur. You have to be an optimist. Otherwise, you know, we would not be doing what we do if we were not optimists.
Right? Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time. And I appreciate that, you know, you could, you know, chat with me. I hope we get to do this in person sometime.
I'd love to.
Yeah, that would be great. But I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day and a great week ahead.
You too.